Welcome to episode 98 of the Real Feedback Podcast. This episode is sponsored by Shelby Flooring Limited, domestic and commercial flooring experts. For all your flooring needs in Hertfordshire and the surrounding areas, Shelby Flooring Limited specialise in everything from laminate vinyl tiles to carpet and engineered timber flooring, to name but a few. Go to shelbyflooring.co.uk or call 07706 479 860 now. I'm sorry it's taken me so long to release this episode, but it is for good reason. Coming up soon is my 100th episode, and I've been trying to secure a guest for a special live show who has now confirmed, but without a date yet set. So I'm having to stagger releases in the meantime. I can't say who it is, as I don't want to jinx it, but it is a big one and the person who has been at the top of my wish list since I started the podcast. But on to episode 98. And it's two for the price of one in the form of John and Hugh from Genga, whose album Red Sun Titans is out now. And if you haven't yet bought it, do it now, because as you can hear from the song playing underneath my waffling, it is excellent. You first hear me chatting with John, and I just complimented him on his Smashing Pumpkins t-shirt just before I hit record. But then the three of us chat about the band's origins, how they landed on the Genga sound, and of course the Ace new album. Lastly, tickets are now on sale for a new comedy club the podcast is putting on in Camden at Powerhouse, aka Dingwalls, on Friday, September the 1st. The Camden Lock-In Comedy Club sees former guest Rich Fulcher, he of the Mighty Boosh, headlining, and you can get tickets via the link on the homepage of realfeedback.co.uk. Please follow me on Twitter or X or whatever the fuck it's called now, and all other places at Real Feedback Pod. Buy Red Sun Titans, and I'll hopefully see you on the 1st of September. This isn't an interview. This is a conversation. This is Real Feedback. John's won me over with his t-shirt already.
Oh, very good. Good start.
I actually had that. I was driving up to London the other day, and I haven't listened to that album, Melancholy, for ages. And I've listened to the whole thing start to finish. So this is a bit weird. Maybe it was foresight for
synchronicity.
Yeah, exactly. How you doing? Is this a usual sort of time for you guys to do this sort of thing?
This is a late start. I mean, we've been getting up at about 6:30 the last few days for the in-stores. Yeah, long drives. Yeah.
But right. You're still in London at the moment, are you? And then you're going up to Nottingham tonight, is that right?
Nottingham was yesterday, Liverpool tonight.
So how many more have you got? You've got Liverpool, and then is it Bristol?
Yeah, and that's the end of it.
Right, because I was supposed to, obviously it says, the meeting says Real Feedback with Felix, but that's who they told me it was, so it wasn't me getting it wrong. But it was meant to be before the album came out as well, so because normally it's, how you feeling about this coming out next week, but now it's out. Is it like a big sort of pressure off the, you know, weight off the shoulders type deal, or is it, how you feeling about it?
Yeah, it's been really nice. I mean, it's just nice to like have your mates kind of text you saying, oh, I love this track. Like, we didn't really share it with many of our like close friends before it came out. So it's just nice having like, you know, a small group of people that you trust saying you like it, let alone having fans that we've kind of got to know over the years at these in-stores coming up and still being there and being, you know, just being fans. So been lovely.
And it's so weird having this set of songs that you know inside out, and you've tested different parts of changing this and that or whatever, and then suddenly to everyone else it's just the first time it's gone in their ears. And something that it's like a child you've nurtured into toddler age, and then suddenly for them it's like a newborn, and you're just hearing their thoughts on it and what they think it sounds like.
Absolutely.
It's just bizarre.
And the amount of kids that we killed in the process.
Well, they say kill your babies, don't they?
I mean, exactly. Even more profound.
the biog that the PR company sent me, it was very much implying that this was a complete sort of wipe the slate clean, go back to the drawing board style in terms of your songwriting and your approach to it. Is that the case? And if so, what was the feel behind that? What was the purpose?
I guess because it was like, it started basically on day one of lockdown. So it was all a bit of a mess and a very long mess for until the very end where it all came together. But at the very end, it was all, It's all started in the computer because it had to, and like people and all of us sharing ideas that way, and it was all getting very sort of produced in a very like laptop kind of way. And then like I think we kept some of like the guitar textures from that, and just at the very end re-recorded all the drums and bass and vocals live together.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, that's how we ended up with that sound. We're like, hopefully it still sounds like a live band. And that's what we were going for. And it, like our first, we did it at the same studio as our first album. So it was like, oh, it feels like it's all, and that was completely recorded live, not even to a click. So it felt sort of, you know, there's some sort of circle there.
Yeah.
but it sounds way better because we've done three other albums and hopefully know what we're doing now.
Yeah, yeah. I find you talk about recording to a click. I've always found, for me, it's such a weird thing that, you know, being in a band and writing and recording music is supposed to be this expression of art and da 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 da. But when it comes down to being in a studio and then going, right, we're now recording your part for this song, it's, you got to try and find this balance of, you know, conjuring up the emotion and the feeling, but also not completely fucking it up or timing wise, whatever. And I find playing to a click, it makes it so military, and I don't like it basically. So we always used to record the track together to get the drums, and then we just overdub the rest, or we just record, if we didn't have the budget for it, we just record live and capture it all, and then that's it. Mm. And then they mix it. But do you have a kind of a preference in, do you prefer that sort of the safety of the click? Or do you, because one of the things I love about the band is the groove that you guys get. You say about hopefully it sounds like a live band. One of the reasons, 100% yes, is because the groove you get, particularly on this album, is incredible, absolutely incredible.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't know, yeah, I mean, hats off to Danny.
Yeah.
But obviously Danny needs Hugh to lock in on the rhythm, and it needs John, all the layers on the top. Is there a question at the end of this ramble? I don't know. Did it feel, the whole laptop thing, did it feel completely alien, or was it inspiring for you guys?
I got Ableton again at the start of lockdown because they did that thing where it was free for like a year. So I was like, oh, I've got nothing else to do. I'll learn how to do that. And just the fact you could just push R and it reversed everything, like, I completely abused that.
Right.
But after about a year, I was like, okay, I'll use that tastefully. So I was like really enjoying that. And like trying to sort of do like warp records, like 90s warp records sort of influence, like Boards of Canada and Aphex Twin, trying to bring that into it. And like definitely we had like no choice but to record to a click because everything else, all that stuff had been recorded to a click. And I was like, I can't, not yet. I don't know how to recreate this live. So, yeah. But yeah, Danny and Hugh are very tight and together. So they bring the groove. And then me and Felix are, time is all over the place, so we're making it feel like a live
yin and yang. But it's interesting talking about clicks. You've reminded me that we just kind of had it as a default the last few albums. We haven't even thought about not really. We've just like, we're so used to it. But I would be quite up for maybe next album sacking off the click.
Yeah.
Because as you say, it's a very different experience, and we did do it once and it was fun, so it might be a nice, you know, you've inspired us.
Yeah, but then there's the pressure on Danny to go, right, I must, don't speed up.
It's true. It's easy for me to say, you're right.
I mean, how is he?
We'll speak to Dan later.
So live, do you use backing tracks live? Or is it all just the four of you?
There's a tiny,
got some triggers.
Yeah,
some triggers that
there's a lot of sampling going on,
like synth parts.
There's a couple, so he does need to see. He plays to click live, so maybe might put him completely.
I think
it would
have to be with new like material written specifically without a click. Do you know what I mean? You can't like reverse engineer.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's those kind of vibes. But it's something to think about, definitely.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So I just want to go back to, I'm always interested in how bands formed. It says you guys formed at school, which is great because some bands obviously put out an ad or whatever, but this seemed to be four mates who, were you all playing instruments at the same time? Did one of you pick up a guitar and go, why don't you learn the drums? Why don't you learn the bass?
Well, it's both stories actually are true. So me, Danny and Felix met at school. And then we put out an ad for John. Oh, right. We were in our early 20s, mid 20s. Our guitarist left, who's now a very successful solo artist, MT Hadley. I don't know if you know him.
Right, no.
Check him out. But a good decision for him. And for us, because we got John. And yeah, in terms of the very start, Danny's dad's a musician. Me and Danny went to primary school together, actually. So we were always just kind of knocking around in his attic with his dad's instruments and playing whatever we could and pots and pans, and eventually picked up. I started with guitar, actually, and had a few lessons. And I used to take like Dr. Dre to my teacher and be like, I want to learn this. But he said there was no guitar. But it was mostly bass, so he let me his bass, and that's how I started playing bass.
Right. Yeah, most bassists don't decide to play bass, I find.
No, like this, yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah, slip into it.
So, John, for you, what was the ad? What was in the ad that you went, oh?
It was the mention of Fugazi.
Oh, right, okay.
Which was kind of a lie, but it got me in.
It was a bit, yeah. We weren't playing it much. Fugazi type music at the time, really.
No,
still don't.
It's for 3 weeks in, John just goes, so when are we doing the Fugazi stuff?
Yeah. We did actually do a Fugazi cover. Was that just to placate you, John?
Yeah, that was.
When you first started at school here, were you just playing covers?
We've actually never done covers. We were always just doing crap songs from the start, which I think, you know, managed to hone some kind of working relationship between us anyway.
I'm always fascinated with bands that have got sound like yours, because for me, I'm the stuff I'd write, I used to go heavy on the melody. It was kind of garage punk. I was saying to John before you came on, growing up, it was Smashing Pumpkins, Pixies, Nirvana. That was my era. And so it was all quite a lot of power chord driven, quite simple, but very rowdy, and didn't have to be that tidy in places. But your sound, there's such complexity to it. I'm always intrigued how a band finds that sound when normally you get, I mean, this is exactly why I never got a record deal, but because when I write a song, I pick up a guitar and I'll start with a G and a B or whatever. But there's so all this intricacy with your sound. How did you land on, and Felix's vocal style as well, with a lot of falsetto. How did you land on the Gengar sound?
I reckon the complexity just comes from boredom. It's probably unnecessarily complex.
I think we're
all like it.
Fundamentally selfish and just enjoy like noodling and doing like things that are slightly showy offy, which then kind of adds up to something a bit complex, I suppose.
Hugh's noodling again. I need to noodle a bit more.
Noodle off.
Yeah, noodle off. So, I love the album. Otherwise, it'd be quite awkward right now if I said, yeah, I struggled with it. I thought it was quite shit. No,
that'd be interesting in its own way.
Well, yeah. I've always wondered, would I, because there's a couple of podcasts I've said no to just because it wasn't, you know, can't claim to be any sort of, you know, great fountain of knowledge for music. So if it's just something I'm not up for, I'd probably say to the person, maybe shouldn't have them on. But so everyone I have on is because I love the album. So it's been on heavy rotation for me for a few weeks now. And there's certain tracks. I mean, the interview is the golden chalice. It's such a great tune. And that bit in the middle that you could have just kept the heavy section, that you could have gone, we need to do that bit again. Nope, just doing it once. Fuck, that's such a... Yeah, I don't know. There's no question here. It's just me stroking the ego. But in terms of things like I read there's sort of a concept in, it's quite an optimistic album, which is, it's good for me at the moment. I like, you know, everyone likes a bit of optimism. So was that purposeful going in? Because you say you started writing in lockdown, it could have gone completely the other way. Did you feel like you, for your own sanities, that you needed to create joy, so to speak?
It'd been like a sort of a heavy few years in personal life. So, which seemed to have like settled a little bit. Like me and Felix got married. I got married last year. Felix is married 2 years ago. Something like that. So, yeah, sort of felt like life was getting a bit better. Yeah. Maybe. And that was sort of reflected.
Yeah, I guess when you get older, not to give away too much, but when when you get older, you get hopefully, and I felt like most of the time, you get a bit more grateful for being able to do things that you enjoy doing, and maybe a bit less angsty and kind of jealous, and you know. So I think we're just genuinely enjoying it. Maybe that's what's getting picked up on. Hopefully.
You kind of chilled out a bit.
I suppose.
We finished it last year, and then so like this year it's been not so great personally. Mm-hmm. Life outside of the band, mm-hmm. for me at least. So I'm really enjoying like playing these songs every day. Because I'm like, it's like an escape from, it's like its own different reality. So I'm enjoying that.
Well, I guess in that fundamentally, that's the whole purpose of a band, isn't it? Is
it's meant to be fun,
or to play? Yeah, it's being with friends and creating something and having that escape or being able to channel whatever the issue is into. I mean, when my band split up, I'm missing like not screaming into a microphone at least once a week in a studio or on stage, you know, Camden gigs, whatever. I suddenly became quite a frustrated, angry young man again. And I was like, what? And I couldn't work it out for ages, but I realized it's because I had that that release and that was then gone. And it is, I think it's cathartic and it's very, yeah. I think it's good to hear that you can channel it that way. So the album was produced by Matt Glasby. Is that how you say his name? And it said executive produced by Charlie Andrew. What does that mean? That's not engineering. It's not mixing. What does executive production mean?
It meant Matt was there the whole time dealing with our indecisive nonsense. And then Charlie would come in and just be like, every now and then, just be like, what are you doing?
Want a sandwich?
Yeah. Exactly. Occasionally fresh ears and fresh sandwiches. It worked well. I think Matt and Charlie have worked together for years, and Charlie felt like Matt was kind of ready to take it more on himself and do more of the work, and Charlie had other projects going on, and so they kind of agreed that Matt would take the lead with it, whereas I think before that it would have been Charlie taking the lead, so it's kind of a slight swap of roles almost.
Did you used to have your own studio in Stoke Newington, I read?
We didn't have it. We kind of rehearsed there all the time and have been going there for 10 years. So it felt like ours, but it wasn't actually ours.
I was curious, is it the one in Manor Road?
No.
Right.
It's Boothry Road, Karma Studios.
Because I had to go and meet someone there to pick something up a couple of weeks ago. And then I saw you guys had, rehearsed in a studio in Stoke Newington. And I'm, you know, obviously there's more than one studio in Stoke Newington.
There's not many though. Manor Road is... Which one's that?
It's basically as you come out of the station, the road directly opposite, there's some flats down there. There's a snooker club and stuff, but there's this door and it's just this labyrinth I'm assuming they're all music studios. His wasn't the rehearsal room. His was a recording studio, but, you know, just basically sort of bedroom size. But just kitted out. I mean, I was in.
Oh, I think I know what you mean. Sorry, this is very boring.
tell me if you get on Google Maps, everyone.
The intricacies of London geography.
But I was always jealous because I've never had the space to have my own recording. You mentioned Ableton, John. I did the 3-month trial on every credit card and email address possible until it ran out, and then I just flip it to another one. And now I've completely exhausted it, and I've got no, I've got you know, mortgage and 2 children. I haven't got the spare cash to. It's about £300 or something. Ableton, although it's great, you know. If they want to send me a freebie, that'd be great. So obviously you're doing a couple of the installs. Is it a full band? Is it a sort of scaled down acoustic set? How do you?
Depends on the size of the record shop. So like the Rough Trade ones are all full band.
Right.
Because they've got like a stage and a PA, and then everything else is like, it's still the four of us. And I'm still playing an electric guitar, but it's stripped
back. Right, okay.
There's no crash cymbals.
And is it a sign-in and stuff as well? Is it a meet the fans?
Yeah.
How do you do you like that sort of, I mean, obviously you're not going to go, no, I fucking hate it, but is it, I mean, is it weird? I mean, I've only ever been to one. Well, I did a Kings of Leon signing years ago, and they couldn't have looked more like they didn't want to be there. So in a very diplomatic way, yeah. How is that for you guys?
I suppose Kings of Leon have done it a fair bit more than us, I'd imagine, and for longer periods of time. Like ours are normally just, we don't do it very often. Oh, and they don't take very long. So it's like, oh, this is great. This is nice. And as I mentioned before, like we've started to get to know some of like the core fans over the years, and there's like familiar faces and stuff, which is really nice.
Right, okay. And do some of them follow you around the country as well, or is it just they'll pop up in a certain city?
They'll just be normally in the same city, and we'll go, oh, yeah. Right.
So it doesn't get too restraining order.
No.
Weren't you in Japan last week? Yeah, no, mate, I'm joking. So I want to talk a lot about the sounds of the album as well, because especially like John, the guitar, already talked about the noodling sort of side of things, but when it comes to playing with the different sounds, how do you land on what do you use first of all? I mean, is it an array, is it a pedal board, is it what, is it like a helix thing?
Like a pedal board which has like the little helix at the end, so that's doing quite a lot of stuff, and like got some like micro looping pedals and loads of pitch shifting, just making it sound like digital nonsense,
right?
Listening to a lot of boards of Canada and a lot of like Aphex Twin, the more relaxed Aphex Twin, and Smashing Pumpkins. So like trying to just mix those two together. At the end of In the Moment, it's like the most rock guitar rig ever. It was like a Les Paul custom into a Mesa Boogie in a massive 4x12, like oversized. And it was like, they're like, what are you doing? I was like, trust me, just put a whack of tremolo on it. And it becomes like a big, like square wave pad sound. So it's like doing that kind of stuff. It's like, I want to, you know, I'm 14-year-old me wants to be in James ER and Smashing Pumpkins, but I can make this work.
Yeah, just go with it. Yeah. It's interesting because that's the song. I mean, I don't know what the song's about, but I've written on my notes the Jiggy song. Because it sounds like, you know, you see your partner across the room. It's got such a come here vibe. It's great. I mean, that was one of the things I thought, the groove on this album, and that was one of the main ones that made me think. Okay, so I mean, yeah, Smashing Pumpkins. I don't mind talking about Smashing Pumpkins. Siamese Dream is for me the one guitar wise. There just seems to be about 40 tracks of guitars. So do you, if you're such a big fan of that sort of thing, how do you know when to stop? Or is that Matt's job to go, right, that's enough, John?
Yeah, it's not really like, you know, everyone else in the band is like, stop it.
Yeah.
This is boring. You've had your time.
Yeah. Eight tracks is enough. I mean, that's the thing with bass, isn't it, Hugh? Because obviously, I don't know if you do more than one bass track on any sort of thing, because I'm done.
I've not tried that yet. No.
See, I'm just handing you all these new ideas.
Exactly. So inspiring. No, my pedal setup is incredibly rudimentary. I don't know. I just think it's hard to be too wacky with bass sounds, particularly with John doing the wackiness. It's, you need a bit of solidity in the bottom end. So I take a bow to John.
I wanted to ask about the interludes on there, the three interlude tracks. And I think bands have different reasons why they do stuff like that. Some want to do a sort of a concept thing. Some genuinely want to separate those three songs from those three. And some of them, which is what mine would be, is that I had a great idea for 1 minute of music that I couldn't stretch out into a full song. But I wanted to include it. So what's the story with the interludes on this album?
All three were like fully formed songs, and we were like, that bit's really good, but the rest of it's not going to make the record, so we're like, we'll just cut that bit out. Mm-hmm. and then produce that with that in mind, kind of thing.
And also we felt on the last album it was quite claustrophobic, like to not enough space, like very just like song,
very abrupt, like abrupt. Song.
Yeah. melody. So we hope that just having a bit of rest for the old ears and just a bit more kind of dynamic range when you listen makes the next song maybe feel a bit more exciting.
Yeah, oh, that's a really interesting take on it. I mean, particularly something like Floating in the Undercurrent, which has this kind of Eastern guitar. So I don't know what, again, what sounds you've used, and then this sort of Blade Runner feel underneath it. And it's so, it's a great contrast. Obviously, you're doing the Rough Trade stuff, and then later in the year, you've got a tour, a UK tour. Is it Electric Ballroom you're playing?
Yeah.
That's Have you played there before?
No.
I've played there as a, in a different band.
Right, okay. Because I played there once, as supporting a band, and the back, I wanted to talk to you about the backstage, because it looks like, it reminded me of my nan's house. Because you got this massive cool venue, and then you go backstage and it's this tiny little carpeted winding staircase. You go, well, hang on, you just feel like you're in some old granny's house.
It's a disaster if someone's coming downstairs and you.
It's going to take a while. So how do you new album? How do you formulate a set now? I mean, what are you on stage, an hour and 15 or something? So everyone wants to play the new stuff, but the fans want the mix. So do you just sort of bit for them, bit for you?
I mean, at the moment, the installs, we're playing for like half an hour. So it's like four new songs and then bangers.
Right. They're just double that for live, yeah.
Okay. Basically, yeah, we always try and play our most popular songs because it would be foolish not to. And then maybe like 60% new album on a tour, maybe less, 50-50 even. It's got to find that sweet spot, really.
I always find a band, it's always a good idea to open with a new song because people are still so excited that you've just walked on the stage that there's a good way to get one a new one out and without anyone moaning, going, oh, not another new one, you know.
we've used that trick before. Thanks for reminding us.
Yeah. So is this released on your own label? Is that right? It's Liberator... because that's what the bug implied, that you guys, it's your own label now. Or is that not quite right?
It's a label services thing. So it's kind of like it's a joint venture. I'm not very business savvy, technical, with the wrong two to ask.
Wrong guys. So
wrong guys to ask. Phoenix would do a better job. But my understanding is it's like a 50-50 profit share. We've paid for the album. They pay for marketing, so it's not a normal kind of setup anyway. So we have more control of proceedings than a normal record deal, but basically, and we own the masters.
Obviously, you haven't gone fully autonomous with it then. You're in charge of the whole.
Yeah, exactly.
And is it working for you in terms of you get a bit more, because a lot of bands that want to, you know, sign away their creative license literally in its entirety. Yeah, yeah. So does it feel more like? I know you're not the business guys, but do you like having it more ownership over your work?
Definitely, yeah. It's always a good thing if you can. I mean, we were lucky enough to have just about enough cash left over from the last album campaign to like front the album. So if you can front your album, then you know the back end's always going to be in your favor because you're the investor instead of someone else, I suppose.
Yeah. And any festivals over the summer?
Yeah, we've got a few booked in already. Hopefully some more slots after the album's been released now. Some nice ones that we've never done before. Lost Village, Secret Garden Party.
Oh, nice. I imagine you'd be a good Latitude band. That's probably my favourite festival. I love Latitude. Yeah,
so good. We've done that a few times. So yeah,
not this year.
Maybe I think next year.
Make them wait. Keep them keen.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I wish you all the best, guys. All the best with the album. All the best with the in-stores and everything. Thank you so much. Absolutely cracking album. And I will be at Electric Ballroom later in the year.
Well, it'd be great to see you in person. Thanks,
man. Yeah, there you go. We'll have a beer. All right, nice one. Yeah. Cheers, guys. Say.